Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 88 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, Scott Dienbach and Mr. David Palin join me for another TDD TIE. They don't do that in Europe. The first one of the year, 2017 and 18 season. We're kicking it off for reals here today with the first TDD TIE. Very exciting. We tried to pack in as much as we could. This thing is just jam-packed with stuff from World Cup to Guyton to Nierpelt to the upcoming Charm City to the US Cup CX. We got letters, we got phone calls, we got it all. And I need to get to it because we even cut out a lot and we're still at an hour and a half. So I want to get this done right now. And to do that, I need to tell you about two things. First off, Health IQ. Hey, Bill, you always tell us about Health IQ. Well, I'm telling you again because it is going to be your job, your commitment to the wide angle podium cause this year and this show to go to healthiq.com/CXHairs, fill out the survey, learn more about the life insurance opportunities that they have available for you. It helps us at the show. And it helps you too. Life insurance, something that none of us want to think about, but all of us should. And the Health IQ Advantage is they have a unique mortality model. Sounds a little scary, but it's actually something cool because what that does is it relates to health conscious people. They have lower rates for health conscious people, like it's like a good driver savings on auto insurance. This is a good body savings on that you take care of yourself. You know, they replace BMI with waist to hip ratio. They have different cholesterol calculations. And to qualify, you need to take their quiz and then talk to them, and then they'll help you get lower rates. It's a win-win. They're not a middleman. They are actually the life insurance company that you are dealing with. I did it. You did it. You should do it too. It will help out the show, as I said. So please, let's get those clicks on there so they continue to support us so we can continue to bring this show to you. HealthIQ.com/CXHairs. Also, you know this one's coming too. WideAnglePodium.com. We have so much awesome content out there. We want you to be a part of it. So check out all the shows. Make sure that you become a member. If you love Crosshairs Radio, and I hope you do, and I hope you tell all your friends about it, and you'll also love Bike Shop CX. You'll also give it a listen. Slow Ride Podcast. Go check them out. Dirt Field Recordings, we're coming back. We have one new Dirt Field Recordings up there. We have a couple more that are coming out soon, including my sit-down with Lindsay, which is happening tomorrow night. So that should be up soon as well. Go to wideanglepodium.com, hit the donate button, become a member, help support all the shows like this one. They don't do that in Europe. Crosshairs Radio, episode 88. Scott Dienbach is going to take over the controls, and he's going to do that right now.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back for the first They Don't Do That in Europe of the 17-18 season. With me, as always, on my, I don't have the screen in front of me, I'm going to say on my left, Mr. David Palin.
Good evening, guys. Gents, it's so good to speak with you guys once again. We actually saw each other early this season, and it's good to be in the air-conditioned space of Bike Shop CX Central again.
That's true. And on the right, Bill Shiken.
And we sit here and we talk for like 20 minutes, and David's, you know, like sort of got this calm level and everything's good. And then he just like blows out his levels and he's so excited.
Talk to you guys, man, I just gain all over the place.
It's you just get amped up.
Ask Scott about the time we recorded in Wisconsin there. We were all dragging after being out in the heat all day. And then it's like, okay, we'll do a podcast.
Yeah.
You just got to get up. I mean, that's why people pay us the big dollars. Because we come with our game day face on.
Was that when Scott also had the flu?
Yes, that was the beginning of the flu, and David forced me to do 15 minutes of podcasting.
Oh, you poor thing. Then he gave me the flu in return so I could go to my son's wedding and be sick.
So, hey, Bill, let's start off this this They Don't Do That in Europe with a thank you to Dan Chabanoff for stepping in for us, man. That was an awesome show you guys did.
Yeah,
that was a good B show.
The B team. The B squad.
Yes, very good. That being said, we're going to like step back to that for a second and do a little bit of World Cup recap amongst the three of us. Correct? Does that sound good?
Yes.
Yeah, because you guys covered a lot of stuff and we just want to have some input of our own. So and we talked some about this at Rafa.
Evidently, we didn't talk about Tobin enough. And since you are out there prognosticating him winning, then
listener, viewers should go check out the if you're a Wide Angle Podium subscriber, go check out the Bike Shop CX special content, and you'll hear me talking to Tobin and predicting that he's going to win the first two races. Boom.
Yeah. Hey, I did this on Twitter today because somebody asked when I said, I don't know if you saw that, I was saying that we were recording TDD TIE today, and somebody said, hey, what's TDD TIE? So we have like new viewers.
Wow.
So I thought we should, or I can quickly review.
Yeah, because you kind of explained it with Dan. So yeah, explain it again really quick.
Okay, well, it's TDD TIE is sort of the subset of the Crosshairs Radio that the three of us do that we brought over from Cyclocross Network. Cyclocross Today. It became Crosshairs Today. Cyclocross Today. Right, and the whole joke is that at least in my experience, when people would show up at races, usually local races, and they see something that looked a little off or didn't look right or didn't look what they perceived to be real, finger quote, cyclocross, they would say, well, they don't do that in Europe, meaning that, Europe is
right. And typically
high pantheon of cyclocross, the best of the best. And then every time that you watch these races and realize that they do dumb stuff too, and you'd see a pinwheel or you'd see a pump track or all of this stuff, which is awesome, which we love, but it's kind of crazy as well. So, and every time my sort of stock line was, well, they don't do that in Europe,
right?
Whenever those
right.
Happen.
So if you're saying a lot of they don't do that in Europe, it probably means you're not watching a lot of European cyclocross.
Exactly.
Because if you do, you see all the same stuff that we have going on over here. So, yeah. So that's what they don't do that in Europe. TDDTIE hashtag that we use.
And listen how quickly that rolls off the tongue now. After
yeah, we struggled for a little while with it.
It seemed so cumbersome when we first started, and now it's just bam. So, all right, well, we're going to talk about World Cups. Let's start Jingle Cross, just kind of a general overview. I don't think we want to go through results and all that stuff. You guys kind of did that. We've done that. Any like thoughts hitting you that you want to just kind of put out there, Bill, since you were there?
We did have some viewer mail, I believe, talking about, which I think we've mentioned before, the whole thing with Vanderpool winning, and I think we've said this a lot, was just really it was not as much his brute power as it was his handling skills and his descending skills. And should we do a little technique? We got a letter explaining technique.
Yeah, that's true. And I think we could say the same thing about Nash at Jingle Cross too. I mean, I think you saw a similar technique with both of them. But yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so this is from Jeff, and he says that high-speed swooping switchbacks, I just took some downhill mountain bike lessons, and the instructor retrained my cornering technique to keep the pedals parallel when cornering versus dropping the outside pedal to weight the bike down. VDP was railing it, and his technique, the same as I mentioned, pedals parallel. And then he asked a question. My question is whether that is a more recent technique that he learned mountain biking. It seemed ripping fast. How much faster was he on the descent than the rest of the race? And to be perfectly honest, I didn't notice that. And it's a cool tip, and it is something that I am going to look for from now on. And we all learn that, right? I mean, you put your outside crank all the way down so you don't get a pedal strike. And that's what you learn on the road. So it seems like
most of us who probably started on the road, that's the kind of the technique we were bringing over, either that or just, you know, tripoding with the leg out, but keeping in parallel. Yeah, I think that's a good eye there and a good tip for maybe going faster on those.
Yeah, descents. And likewise, I mean, you know, you typically hear about keeping your pedals balanced on like a long road descent, right? You're going to try and balance. You're not going to leave one leg way down.
I was thinking more going into turns.
Yeah, but like on that real steep switchback descent. And I didn't really think about it either until I read that. And then I like kind of flash back in my head. I'm like, you know, that's right. Now that he says that, I remember that's how he does that. But I don't know if that's something new. Or if it's something he's been doing for a while. So yeah, I agree. I can't wait to kind of go back and check out what he's doing with that.
If only there was a video library we could look at.
If somebody would do like some analysis of riding technique from cyclocross races.
You know who would know?
That seems like a good
idea.
You know
who would know the answer to this?
Who would know?
Jens Dekker.
Good point. Jens Dekker had a pretty good weekend, actually.
Yeah, he did. So, all right. Yeah. Well, so that's cool. That was a good question, and hopefully we'll find out more about that, right, Bill?
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. You can get your questions until we got a backlog. I've been saving them up for this first show, but you can add yours for the coming weeks by sending them the feedback at cxairs.com.
Absolutely. All right. Well, anything else jump out at you for Jingle Cross? I mean, blazing hot again. I don't want to keep harping on that, but that's one of the things that sticks in my head.
I went through this whole sort of analysis or conjecture on crowd size.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I think that's where that's in here somewhere, isn't it?
As far as
referring to our lesson plan.
Yeah, well, I thought we had another either letter or...
Oh, we had a letter about it being on Sunday instead of Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. That was it.
You want to read that one?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that's important. And it may play in, you know, I was the whole thing with, if you had listened before, if you haven't, go back and listen to that Dan Chabanov show. I thought that maybe the crowds were not as great for a couple reasons. One being, you know, it seems like the World Cups are coming back, so it wasn't as urgent as it was last year when it was first time and we didn't know if it was going to happen again. And then also the second thing is, you know, last year we had one in Las Vegas, one in Iowa. So I think that Iowa one drew a lot of people from Chicago and further east. And those people may have not gone to the Iowa one, instead just chosen to go to the Wisconsin one, but then I didn't think the crowds were as big as I would have hoped at Wisconsin either. So a viewer wrote in and said that it may, you know, one of the reasons he didn't go was because he lives in Western Michigan, and that it would have been a 7-hour drive to get there, and both World Cups were on Sunday rather than on Saturday, where they, you know, before it had been Wednesday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. And that's much easier to do if you're traveling.
Which makes, it makes complete sense. I think the thing is, you know, especially the Jingle Cross one with the football game, I think it was the police basically told them, hey, we can't cover this many big events in one day. Right.
Well, I mean, that game had national championship implications, so it had to be changed to a prime time television spot. You know, North Texas versus Iowa early season. You know, come January, that's an important game.
So,
the weather was January like.
Yeah,
I think there's something to what you said too, Bill. I think with the two, you know, for the same reason that having the races in closer proximity works for you as far as making it easier for the racers, you know, to get between the two, it also works against you that it might actually split up the crowd. Whereas last year you kind of got one crowd going to Vegas, one crowd going to Jingle. This year you kind of split that Midwest crowd into two different races, and maybe not as many people came from the West Coast, you know, because it was just a lot farther. So I think those are all legit points, and it splits the driving crowd.
But I don't have to say that, you know, yes, the World Cup is on Sunday, but if you're only going to come for the World Cup of those weekends, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. You come and spend Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you can't, then come Saturday. And you're going to see some really high-end racing both Saturday and Sunday.
Well, or even Friday, and I think that, Friday that and was Sunday, the thing yeah. that I was going to add. Yeah, that, you know, it. I can see where it may be a burden for folks who don't want to take a day off and have to work on Monday, although we got in the car and started driving at 8, 9 p.m. On Sunday. As working media, having Saturday with no UCI race was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so good. You had that Friday, and then you could just get caught up on Saturday and then, you know, go through it all again on Sunday. So from a media standpoint, it was a pretty awesome.
And I got to say, too, the Friday night race at Jingle Cross was awesome.
That was that may have been, I think, energy wise, that may have been the high point. I really think, you know, it was a good party scene. Everybody was into it. They were racing, you know, most of the people racing, that's their first big race of the season. It's a C1. You have a World Cup, you know, field racing it. That was, that was a fun race.
You know, you got the whole vibe of it being a night race under the lights, you know, so you get that whole vibe going, and, you know, they do a great job at Jingle Cross. And I think that was one of the, you know, one of the highlights of that weekend, I think, for sure. Like you said, then you have that lull on Saturday and then Sunday. So, yeah, I don't know that there's a good solution. It is a shame. Maybe, and it's hard to do, you know, one. I guess they could do Jingle on Saturday and then Trek on Sunday or something like that. What's the reason they did Trek followed up on Sunday? Just to give more time between Vegas and, I mean, did they have a specific reason, or was that just kind of, does anybody know?
I'm not sure.
You know, because
I think they just had stuff scheduled the whole weekend. I don't know for sure. I can tell. I'll have to go back and see if he puts in there. Ryan Newell had a great article that just came out today on cycling tips that goes into the whole decision, almost, you know, a rent versus buy, why Trek spent all this money really to own a race rather than just sponsor someone else's race, you know, and, you know, talking about that it's not necessarily a dollar for dollar return on investment. They're not getting back as much as they're putting on, but they're just being able to own that and do the equal pay and everything, like, you know, that goes along with it, and being able to control it. It's a well-written article. So it's on
Cycle. Yeah. And I mean, I'm about 3/4 of the way through that. I picked it up on the interwebs. Some CX Hears had tweeted that. It's a really good article.
It's good. It's a good place to get news written elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I think works to their advantage as far as owning, quote unquote, owning a race is, you know, because they are the frame sponsor for Telenet Fidea, they basically can give that team massive support when they come over, right? I mean, they come over here and they can throw all their mechanics at Telenet Fidea, which they did. And, you know, really help support the team that they are a big, you know, sponsor for.
I mean, they support Wout's feet.
Yeah, exactly. So by owning that race, they're able to do that a little bit easier, I think. So, you know, that might be part of their motivation. I don't know.
For sure.
And so, yeah, let's move on to talk about the Trek race a little bit. Amazing. I mean, just amazing. It's always been one of my favorite races, and it, you know, they just continued the trend right on. And just a top to bottom, a great event, other than being completely sick and like wiped out from that. It was just a blast. I had a great time, and hope, you know, it continues to be a World Cup. What about you guys? Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first time up in Waterloo and Trek.
Oh, that's right. You had never been before. I forgot.
No. And I was very impressed. And not just at Trek and not just at the course they had and the crowd, but I got the opportunity to ride around out there. And Craig North and I took the bikes and did a road ride out to Watertown, and just kind of, you know, spent some time on the roads and met some locals. And everywhere we stopped, if we stopped for Coke and donuts or something at a gas station, people would all come in and just like, oh, you're here for that bike racing thing. And but super nice and really like interested, not just, hey, get off the road, giving you the one hand, one finger wave kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was nice. It's really, really cool.
Bill, what'd you think compared to last year?
I think that my biggest concern when I showed up, and again, just looking at this from having to work it as media, was we sort of had two extremes going from Jingle to Trek. Jingle, you know, you needed, if you wanted to get to a finish line, you needed to make sure that you had a lap to get there, because it was a haul from one end of the course to the other. True. I mean, you were just traveling a distance, and it was sweet. It made for a great course. Trek was complete opposite, where they just stuffed everything into a much smaller area, which made it, you know, really dynamic and exciting, because you basically could sit in one or two places. You know, you could be at one place, jog, you know, 50 meters and see the race three times during a lap easily. You know, if you were on that, and then you had a big screen. So if you were near the planks and you had a big screen there, you could see them go over the planks. You could see them go over that tabletop, and then you could see them come through the pits without moving very far at all. And then, you know, even just looking a little over your shoulder, you could see them go over the flyover, which was, That's pretty cool. I mean, that's four sight lines in one race. You don't get that everywhere. So, but the concern was, you know, trying to cover it, that makes it so much harder to get around, because you have to go through multiple course crossings, or you have to really figure out how to get through that whole spaghetti maze to get from one end to the other. But I thought from a volunteer basis and a logistical basis, they did an awesome job, and I had no problem. I mean, I was able to get around that whole course fast and get to the finish line, and you know, it made it much more enjoyable to watch. You know, look, we're covering the race, but we're also fans and spectators at a certain level, so we want to see cool stuff, and we were able to do all that and get around the course and still film and do what we needed to do for the people who were thankfully paying us to be there. So that's what I loved about it. I just thought, you know, as you were saying, Scott, it was run really well, and then also we got to see high level racing. My one criticism is they could have made it a little less hot.
Right. I mean,
they do have a lot of power in that town.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, they have enough power that their security protocols are so high that they make it impossible to use a cell phone. So right there, that's some power.
But okay, in all down the interwebs too.
Yeah. In all honesty, though, that's probably a problem that they need to solve. I think is the lack of mobile signal. You know, I mean, I think one of the things, the Wi-Fi helped, but one of the things you want is you want people, you know, putting stuff out on social media as they're there watching.
It's hard, though. I mean, we were staying a mile and a half away. I mean, I don't know what happened there, you know, what government program is, you know, underneath the ground or whatever, but we were a mile and a half away, and the people had internet in their house, and it still was like
crappy.
You know, I expected to hook up and go, you know, and the modem to kick in and get our 28.
So, yeah, but I mean, so I'm sure that's frustrating to them, and I'm sure they'd love to solve that. One of the problems they did solve, I don't know if you remember, Bill, but because I've been going there for a few years, is you were always, when you were in the team parking, were always parked in. You were inside the course. And to get out it was just a long wait and cars running, and it was hot, you know, hot, and you had exhaust because half the people are riding diesels in their sprinter vans. And, you know, there's always this. So that's all solved, right? You can get in and out now without.
Yeah, that was crazy where you had the prologue basically through the parking lot before.
Right.
And I understand, and they solved it. They were able to solve it. I mean, the issue was always there was no place to have a long enough starting stretch that met UCI requirements, and they eked it out, I think,
to the millimeter.
Yes.
They got the minimum real estate necessary for a start. And because it was definitely a fast one. And we saw the result of that in the men's race with them basically drifting around that first corner and the back of the pack, not really making it.
And that said, again, I think also the Friday race at Trek was really, really good. I don't think it was quite as good as the Friday night race at Jingle, but still really good. Vanderpool shows up. I'm like, I didn't even know he was in the thing until all of a sudden there he is. I'm like, oh my God, you know, Matthew Vanderpool's in this race. So that was interesting.
Well, we saw him when he came into the pits.
On Friday night. Yeah. So for people obviously that weren't there, Vanderbilt came in at one point, Bill, and he made a bike exchange. And as he's coming in, his rear wheel hits some kind of bump in the pit lane and the rear of his bike like bounced. All of a sudden, he's just about ready to remount on the new bike. And all of a sudden, his saddle is about at the height of his head.
Shoulder high, yeah.
Because the whole rear of the bike just completely bounces up in the air. So he kind of had to do this like double stutter, you know, regain himself and hop back on. But, you know, when you're leading by 3 hours, it doesn't matter that much. But
you can take that time.
But, you know, he and Tone kind of made it a little bit interesting. And then Vanderpool kind of dominated again. But still, a very compelling race to watch there Friday night. A lot of big names, you know, for a Friday night race like that before the World Cup. Corne Van Kessel, Easterbeat, of course, Tom Ewson, you know, so a lot of big names there on a Friday night to see that. So that was cool. One of the things I wanted to mention, then they went on, had the World Cup, of course, on Sunday. Vanderpool is equally as dominant in that. But in the women's race at Wisconsin with... So I'm like losing track. On Sunday, the women's race was won by
Sonny Kant,
of course. But in that race was the, you and Dan talked about the pit exchange with Helen Wyman.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and one of the things, I just wanted to run over really quick so that people understand how the pit etiquette works in the World Cup. It's kind of like, so you have the manager's meeting the day before at like 5:15, right? And that's where all the countries get to pick what lane they want for their, for the race, right? For the World Cup race. Belgium always picks lane number one. It's almost like they should just pencil that one in. But everybody picks their lane. For the U.S. At both races, it's now Jeff Proctor making the choice for the U.S. And I did not go, because I was sick, I did not go to the manager's meeting at Trek. But I did go at Jingle. And I know, you know, one of the issues for the U.S. is they had 16 riders, right, in one pit lane. And, you know, Proctor did ask at the meeting, hey, you know, since we have a B team, can we get a B lane? And the UCI promptly said no. No, you get one lane. So I was like, man, that's kind of, now that being said, there is usually extra lanes and you can kind of drift down into those and no one, you know, it's not like, you have to stay. What you can't do is go into someone else's lane without their permission. So.
Well, it's, you know, it's like the Cliff Pro Team tries to make sure that they get Czech Republic and Canada next to each other.
Right.
Which makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. So then they can support
their
riders.
Exactly. Because they have both.
The Americans, Katie Nash, and the American, Maglia Rocher.
Exactly. Katka can basically just leave her bike wherever she wants and has some affiliation with the nation.
But one of the things, you know,
evidently
we saw that...
not in Sacramento, though. Huh?
What?
What crickets? Well, she couldn't find someone to pit for in Sacramento.
Oh, that's right. Katarina Nash at the Sacramento race did not have anybody pit for her the first day. She just had a bike sitting there. I didn't even see it was in there. So there's also a pit, you have to have a pit pass. Not only do you have to have a pit pass, you have to have a race specific pit pass, right? So you either have elite men or elite women wristband. They both use wristbands that you only are supposed to be in for that you know, for the race that you have the wristband for. So
how was security there for track?
Not real good.
So same as
it
same
was
as
not
Jingle.
Even as good as Jingle. So at Jingle Cross, there was a guy there who kind of made sure you had a wristband on, but your wristband could have been anything. It could have been one from last year. It could have been, you know, anything. Any blue.
The
any
Sig-Ep fraternity party.
Yeah. The men's band was blue. The women's is red. And if you, as long as it's a color match, you didn't look at it to see that it was the right year or the right race even or anything like that.
Well, I would say, Scotty D, that if you're wearing your wristband from last year and you've worn it for a year, kudos to you, man. You deserve to be in that pit again.
No, but if you were up to something nefarious and simply scotch taped it back together and walked through, it would not be hard to do. That being said, at Trek, there was nobody even. I just walked right in. No, nothing. No. They didn't even look at to see that I was even wearing a wristband. I just walked in. So, yeah, I think that's something. I've never been to a World Cup in Europe, but I think that's something we maybe need to get on a little bit.
I think you need a wristband and a cigar to get into the pits.
Were they shaking iPads at people's bikes in the
pits? I did
not
see any of that. Nothing like that. No.
Really?
Not one. Not that I saw. It doesn't mean it wasn't there. But I was there for the men's race for both. I wasn't there for the women's race. And I didn't see any of that at all. No.
See, that's for, and I guess because you only have one bike, so it's easier to control. But in the World Cup mountain bike races, you can't get into the paddock. Mm-hmm.
He just likes to say paddock, by the way.
I do. It's a fun word.
It's a paddock. Paddock.
And now I'm confused if the paddock is I think the paddock would be more of the the pits are where your tents are, the paddocks where everybody stages. Yeah, different words for, and the technical zone is what we would call the pits. Anyway. You can't get in there to get to staging without getting the fake iPad waved in front of your bike.
The fake iPad. And in case people are wondering, well, why do they care so much about that? This is supposed to be part of the anti-motor doping controls, right? Is you can't then claim, hey, I don't know.
You know everybody.
Right. Hey, I don't know how this bike got in here. I sold that bike 3 months ago and somebody just walked it in. I don't know who it was, you know. It's just supposed to be part of that control and is pretty non-existent, at least at the two World Cups here in the U.S. is pretty non-existent. To be honest.
Yeah, and that's not a knock on the organizers, because that's not
a knock on Cookson, right? We should get rid of that bum.
Should get rid of him.
I'm not 100% sure if at what point that turns over. Is the management of the pit a officials thing, or is it a race director's thing? I'm not sure, but I believe it's officials.
I think everything gets turned over to the officials.
I don't think so. I think it's the other way, to be honest. We'll have to find this out, though.
I know who we can ask.
Okay. Yes, I know who you're going to ask. So, but anyways, with the pit exchange, so partly what happens, because you are, there is this, at least people know, you don't get people wandering into the pit, even though they could have at this race. You don't have this larger number of people in the pit, because I know, Dan was wondering, why didn't somebody help Steph, you know, with that bike exchange that got blown with Helen there. And part of it is just, you know, for the men's race, everybody was helping everybody. We were still helping each other. Chris Ellis helped me with Drew's exchanges. He was pitting for Ian Field. And it just so happened, it was nice. The two of them were separated enough that we could help each other, right? I could cover for him. He could cover for me, because the two riders we were both for the primaries for were staggered enough that we could do that. But it does happen, and all the mechanics do try and help each other like that. But just it's sometimes with the way the timing of the riders coming sets up, it's just hard to cover, everyone that you're trying to cover, helping each other out. The other thing is, you have to, at other races, say a C1 or something, if I'm going to the pit, I can get when the racers check in, they can just grab me two pit passes when they sign in, right? They can sign in and get two pit passes, and they just basically hand them two pit passes for their mechanics. In a World Cup, the person who gets the pit pass has to register. So you can't just way ahead of time say, yeah, give me two pit passes. And then when you see your buddy on the way to the pit, say, hey, come and help me pit, you know, and hand him a pit pass. And now you have two people that can pit. You have to have pre-registered that. And you don't know necessarily, right, exactly who, you know, might may or may not be there that, you know, that can just jump in and give you a hand. So it makes that whole thing a lot more difficult to do, to just have somebody who you know come in and give you a hand pitting like that. So yeah, it's just one of those things. That being said, Steph Wyman, if you were making a list of the best cyclocross mechanics in the world, the guys in the top list, that group at the top, Steph Wyman would be in that group, right? I mean, he's one of the best mechanics in the business. So yeah, that was unfortunate that they had that exchange. But and he took, I don't know if you guys saw on social media, he was like, hey, I blew it. There was, yeah. I got no excuses. I blew it. You know, that was on me, and it was a screw up. So,
no golden gloves.
No. That's right. That's right. So, anyways, I just wanted to mention that because you guys were talking about that a little bit on that show. So, that's kind of how those, the World Cup hits work. So, all right. What else do we want to mention about track? Both World Cups together, basically the Vanderpool Clinic. I mean, what do we want to say about Matthew Vanderpool? I mean, anything.
Well,
other
you know,
than
it's interesting. Good. What do you want to say about Wout Van Aert?
Yeah. What do you want to say about him, David?
I'm interested to hear from someone that analyzes races like at a video level. Maybe Phil Shiken. What's going on with Wout? I mean, is it mountain bike? Because we see that with on the women's side, you see that with Katarina Nash and Pendrell and some of the others, like really high-end mountain bikers, seem to come in at the start of the cross season really on fire. Is that what we're seeing here? That Wout's been more of a roadie over the road season, or what we call cyclocross preseason.
So are you comparing this to last year when he just came out of the gates on fire and won like the first seven or eight
races?
Well,
those that year, certainly Matthew didn't come here, so Wout won those two. And back in Europe, Matthew was injured and wasn't racing in the beginning of the season. So where are you going? There's the track.
What else do you need me to say?
I just need you to agree with me. That's all I need you to do. Say, David, wow, you've really done a good job of an analysis of that. You can have Yeti's.
Yeah, well,
show.
I think that.
You can have
Yeti's. You had a guy last year who was winning every race when the one guy who's faster than him wasn't racing. And now that guy is getting on the. I mean, look, at Jingle, he didn't have a good race. And I think that if possibly Vanderpool was out of the picture again and it was just him versus the 14 Telenet guys, that maybe we'd see a different story. So I honestly think that the right now that Wout Van Aert is going to win races, like he says, he's the first one to say it, when it's heavy and when the weather is horrible, that's what he likes. And that's where he's going to excel. And that's why he has two world championships to Vanderpool's one. You know, I mean, look at even the world championship last year. Vanderpool, before his seven flats, was running away with it. He had like a 30-second lead. I just think he's, you know, he is the fastest guy in the sport right now, and he will be until he decides to go full time on the mountain bike.
So then I guess the only question we have is, after Wisconsin, did he ride home?
Well, wasn't that Vanderpool?
Yeah.
And his brother wasn't there.
It was Vanderpool,
so he didn't have a riding partner.
So he flew home.
Yeah. So, and then we had the split wins, of course, with Katarina Nash and Sonic Kant for the women. It's going to make that very interesting. I think Sonic Kant, it was nice to see Sonic Kant have a good race over here. At least it was for me.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like the, it's kind of like playoffs, you know, you name your sport. She got the split.
Right.
You know, she got the away split.
Exactly.
And that's basically all you're shooting for.
Yep.
And then Nash isn't going to show up for any of the European World Cup.
I don't think so.
So she got her one already. She's ahead of everybody else that's going to be racing it for the remaining ones. So I think she's set up pretty well.
Yep. So all in all, I think great World Cup week. I mean, just a blast. I had a blast. We had a packed week. And I think it was just a great showing. And I think, you know, I just loved it. What about you, Bill?
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm glad that we got those first, you know, 5 or 6 minutes of the show to cover this. And now we can move on to the rest of our
so it won't be a long show tonight.
Yeah, no. All right, so just this past weekend, did we have a race this weekend?
Yeah.
We had a C1, KMC, the first race in the U.S. Cup.
Yes.
Are we excited?
Yes.
I am too.
I am now. Like,
there you go, put your game face on.
I was kind of poo-pooing the U.S. Cup a little bit. I mean, going,
Well, I think that you know, it could not have gone any better for Ryan Trabone and Scott Tiedreau and the rest of that organization, because they got exactly what they needed. It's just a free-for-all, except, you know, right now you have a front runner in the men's side,
exactly,
but not the front runner you thought you were going to get. And then you have two different, you know, winners on the women's side. And I think that it makes it so, at least for Charm City, where it's still up in the air, what's going to happen in that? Who knows who's going to get that $10,000?
If I'd have told you in, say, July or August that Emma White would be tied for the lead after KMC, that would blow your mind, right? You would be like, I want to see that, right? I want to see how that's going to shake out. And that's exactly what we have. Tobin would have been a surprise. I don't think as much of a surprise, but a little bit of a surprise. Anybody not Stephen Hyde would have been a surprise for the men. That being said, I really think, you know, when I did talk to Tobin, he meant, you know, one of the first things he talked about was the U.S. Cup. I think Tobin was looking at that the entire offseason, right? Ready.
Yeah, and I don't think, and he's not, you know, we already saw his ability to ride up there. We already saw that it's really, with as far as Americans go right now, I think there are 4 and maybe possibly 5 if he starts. I mean, we've got one guy, I think Curtis White, who definitely is seeing a little bit of road fatigue, but could hop back in there. But you have Hyde, Tobin, Powers, Werner, and then, you know, I think I'm going to put White in there as well.
Yeah, and you mean in the running?
In the top guys that could win, that you would not be surprised if they won.
Yeah, exactly. No, I would agree. Yep, those are the top 4. Because then those are the top 4, and then number 5 is Spencer Petrov. So, but he's...
Oh, I'm sorry, Spencer. Well, yeah, and that's an oversight on my part, because Petrov is doing awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's at the front of every big race.
Yep. I mean, as it sits right now, he's got 90 points to Tobin's 145. So he is a little ways back. But again, lots of stuff can happen, man. Cyclocross, you know, you can have a mechanical and be out of a race and get 0 for something really quickly, you know. So
right.
The other guy who we've been talking about all season long is Kerry Werner. He is putting together a great season, man. I mean, yes, very, very impressive. Very impressive. So let's give the, go ahead.
Here's my question for you. I'm on the uscup.net, us-cup-cx. Where are my standings?
Your standings are, let me go to the, if you go to the home pay, if you go to uscup-cx and scroll down. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're not there. How did I find the results? Oh, yeah, results. There's a results tab at the front, elite, at the top.
Elite women overall, MOA.
Elite women overall, elite men overall.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. All right.
So there you go.
That's confusing because they have U.S. Cup CX, U.S. Cup XC schedule result. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You got it now, Bill. Have you ever used the internet before?
Now I got it. Nope.
Well, let's give the top five of the first day for the men. In first place was Tobin Ortenblad. Second place, Spencer Petrov. Third place, Jack Kitzbühel. What a great podium that is. Fourth place, Stephen Hyde. And fifth place, Kerry Werner. Yeah, just a great, you know, Tobin's been strong. He's always strong. He's been, you know, improving, you know, race after race after race. Spencer Petrov gets in there with a second, his first C1 podium for elite. And you know, that course is just tailor-made for Spencer's skill set, too. I mean, he's just going to rip that course apart as he did. Not taking anything away from him. I'm not saying that's the reason why what happened. I just think that, you know, that's like his course, and he took advantage of it and just, you know, went for it and did a great job. I mean, Spencer's 19, just turned 19.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. Yeah. So he just...
So that's confirmed. I think there was confusion there because he was 19 and had his birthday, but that was him turning 18 to 19 in Rochester or wherever that was his birthday.
It was him. I think it was him turning 19. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but not 20.
No, that was him turning 19. Okay. As far as I know. Yeah. Okay. What a great result. For the women, that same race. Waiting for results to come here. Okay, in first place was Katie Keogh, of course. Maglia Roche in second place. And third place was Emma White. Fourth place, Crystal Farrar Bruno. Is that how it's pronounced, right? And in fifth place was Crystal Anthony. Katie Keogh putting together a pretty decent season herself. I mean, what can you...
Can we jump ahead to the results of the next day so we can just talk about the overall
in
women?
Yes, go for it.
Well, I don't know what the results are. I just know the overall. I'm just staring at the overall. Well, I can tell you that Emma White won. Maggie Rochette,
second
both
Katie
days.
Katie Keogh was third.
And then Katie Keogh
Rebecca
was third.
Rebecca Ferringer was fourth, and Crystal Anthony was fifth again.
So what that means is that you have Emma White, Maglie Rochette, Katie Keogh all tied at
the
top.
135
points each. That's pretty cool.
That's like you said, that is exactly what they hoped would happen. What we were all worried about looking at the winner take all format that they had was that one person was going to get way ahead and it was going to be over after a race or two. And instead,
we've
got this like everybody bunched up. So great.
And you have one of the favorites in seventh place, Ellen Noble.
Yeah. Yeah,
if we had said earlier that Ellen Noble would be trailing significantly after the first two events, I don't think anyone would believe it. I mean, there's good reason, of course, that she's really targeting the World Cups and all this, but still, for her to be in seventh place after two events, that's impressive for how deep that women's field is.
Yeah.
Why is Mani 26?
It looks like she has no result for the first...
She sat out day one or didn't finish. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that means, but then she should still be in 14th place.
Oh, because she has more points. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Good question. I don't know.
Oh well.
She was relegated.
I'm sure it's just some tab. I'm not clicking on that. That'll tell the answer.
Could it be that she doesn't qualify for the U.S. Pro Cup?
Well, then why does Maglie Rochette?
Well, yeah. that's more American.
Is this the North American Cup?
That's more American. Don't tell them. They haven't figured it out yet.
I just want to really quick on that second day, give the top five for the men. In first place was Tobin Ortenblad. Yes. Second place was Stephen Hyde. Third place, Curtis White. Fourth place, Kerry Werner. And fifth place, Bjorn Seelander.
Yes.
What?
And he was up there. He was up there like, you know, first couple laps, he was out there just putting the pedal to the metal and, you know, making everybody ride hard.
That is awesome.
He's the Stibar, you know, he's got that. He's like, all right, cyclocross people, we're going to do a little road test here. Especially at KMC when you got that, you know, the whole racetrack to start on.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, Bill, it couldn't have gone better. It couldn't have gone better. It's very compelling now. I was kind of down on this a little bit, not thinking it was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was proven completely wrong. And I freely admit it because.
Well, we still got time.
Yeah,
let's not be too positive.
Don't be so positive. It's not like you, Scotty D. I get worried.
This is my goal this year, man. Less negativity, more positive.
Oh, yeah. New year, new leaf. I get it.
You know, we're already going to get the letters about you complaining about pits. We're only
I
one day,
complaining.
One show in.
I was just telling the reality. That was not a complaint.
He's also complaining about parking already.
Oh, my God. I haven't complained about anything. No, the pits. I'm not complaining about the pits. I'm just saying it might be something. I'm just telling the reality and saying somebody might want to get on that a little bit, you know. So, all right. Now, at the same last weekend, the race I went to was the West Sacramento.
Before we do that, we need to do the U.S. Cup men's. I know it's not as exciting, but we have to do the men's overall.
Yeah, equal time, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. We'll quickly go through this. But as we mentioned, Tobin Ortenblad out front, 145 points. Stephen Hyde. So it basically it's 75, 70, 65, 60 down 5 points as you go down. So that's 5 point differentials from the top down. 75 is the most.
But on
you
day
can
two,
get.
70 is the most you can get.
So maybe a C1, 75
yeah, there's,
is the
there's
most.
Different
and
bonus points.
And then
for
C2 is 70.
Yes,
right.
There's,
yeah. So it's
different points.
Different
for
scale
C1
for each.
C2s, yep.
Right. So Tobin, which is weird if you want everybody to show up to every race, then they should all be equal, even if they're not equal C1, C2.
You should talk to Ryan. Can you get Ryan on your show?
He's been here before.
Point.
Okay, so yeah, Tobin, 145 points. Hyde has 125 in second place. The aforementioned Kerry Werner is in third with 110 points. And then Curtis White in fourth with 105 points. Spencer Petrov behind him in 90 points. Bjorn Selander, who is going to Charm City, so he'll be doing that next round. He's also coming to DCCX, which is pretty awesome. And then another guy we have not mentioned in this youth movement, you know, along with Petrov, is Cooper Wilsley.
Yeah.
You know, he's one that sort of gets overlooked, but right up there, seventh place overall. You know, 40 points first day, 45 points second day, so it looks like he's right around there in the standings as well. Jack Kisebirth, you know, as we talked about. Jamie Driscoll, quietly, still hanging around there. He's in ninth place overall. Denzel Stevenson, another young guy, in 10th place. Mm-hmm. So really exciting seeing this youth movement happen in this men's field. Jeremy Powers, 12th place. And that's he did not race the first day, only raced the second day.
So, yeah, no.
And then Gary Milburn, evidently it's just English speaking countries.
He's in there at 13th place.
He's 13th, yeah.
It was so good getting to see Gary. I think he and Fiona are still here. They're going to race Boulder this weekend, and that was awesome. So glad I got to see them this
Yeah, it was
cool
seeing them. For our friends over at Slow Ride Pod, Jeremy Duren in 16th place.
Oh, yeah. And he's British, right?
He is married to former cyclocross racer. Do you know that?
No, I didn't.
I thought she was a director sportif. I didn't.
Now she
Oh,
is.
Speaking of that too, I was going to save this for Bike Shop CX, but I got to say this right now. The coolest
The pit bag, I know.
The coolest bike, the coolest bike I saw all week was Ian Fields Ridley. With the all white with the British flag on it. That thing was sweet.
Very James Bond. Yeah.
That was a cool looking bike. White handlebar tape, DI2, everything. That was a cool looking bike. Anyways, okay. So right. Are we ready? Is it?
We did it. Dan Chabanoff has 2 points.
We should keep an eye absolutely. On that. Yeah. One other thing I want to just mention,
who's messing up his retirement pretty bad, is he got 6 points too.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things.
Oh, I shouldn't say, you know, and I don't, it did, I'm sorry. Ahead. I'm just seeing the blanks. It doesn't, the blanks don't necessarily mean they didn't race, just means they didn't get points.
True.
Right?
But they, you get points way down. I mean, it goes way down. Yeah. So, I mean, you'd have to be really, but I guess, yeah, I guess you could, that could be true.
All right. Let's talk about,
well,
West
but before Sat. We do that, I got to go back because I forgot something about the World Cups, about Trek. You guys, probably one of the most important things is the equal payouts. We've got to give props to Trek for the equal payouts. I can't believe I even forgot this because I put that. It was on the lesson plan, top of the lesson plan, and we jumped right into it so fast I forgot to mention it. But
I did mention it before.
Yeah, we've all mentioned it before, but I mean,
I mean, in this show, you were probably zoned out or looking at
results. Yeah, I'm still on West Coast time, you know.
That's the only reason I'm still awake now.
But, you know, I cannot say enough about how awesome that is for Trek to step up and do that. I mean, that's just amazing. And I think hopefully it sets some kind of precedent because it's deserved. So there we go.
Two things. One is equal payout. The other, not quite as important, but, or I mean, socially important and impactful, but buying the rights and live streaming the races, kudos to Trek again this year.
Yes. That
will help grow the sport so much more than almost anything else. Those two things will help grow the sport more than so many other things that are going on with our sport.
I agree. So, all right. What
I just need to make sure they are on the same page with the button pushers at YouTube, and everything will be good.
Right, with the background music cutting off. Yeah, but all right. So West Sacramento GP, first year UCI race C2. It was a great event, you guys. I was blown away with how good it was. One of the better. I've never been to Gloucester. One of the better C2s that I've ever been to. They had everything. The course looked amazing. The pit was amazing. The cool start hook around was cool. I mean, it was great. It was a great C2. Decent fields, you know, considering especially they were going up against the, you know, the first U.S. Cup race, C1 on the other coast. So, you know, both men's race and women's race, fun to watch. All the riders loved the course. It was a fun course. Live music. I mean, they had live bands playing like basically all day.
That's kind of a West Coast thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was awesome.
Like marching bands and drum corps. Yeah.
I mean,
we have that at Matt Anthony, by the way. Right. So if anyone here in the Midwest needs live music, Hullabaloo plays Matt Anthony.
So they had a stage set up with the bands right in front of where the beer zone was, that you could have beers and stuff, which were right in front of the barriers that the riders had to run. So excellent job. I mean, I'm glad I went, and I would go again for sure. No question about it. So well done. Well done. So, all right. What do you want to talk about next? Charm City?
Yeah, well, I mean, you should at least mention, you know, there was a little, I know.
Yeah, I would love to.
Pushback from Amanda Nauman on their, you know, an article out there saying there were, you know, people were going, insinuating that folks were going to the West Sacramento race to poach points.
Yeah. What basically. A load.
And I. Yeah, well, especially in the women's field.
Yeah, so I mean, the top five women are all live on the West Coast.
But not only that, the top five women would have been factors.
Absolutely.
At KMC,
you could just as easily everybody that went to KMC was trying to get away from Katarina Nash. They didn't want to race against.
Right.
I mean, I don't usually think of Katarina Nash as a point poacher.
Right. Yeah.
No, so yeah, I was this which one was the one that so you had was this both was the same podium both days?
Yes. Yep. Same podium.
All right. So you had
Katarina Nash, Courtney McFadden, Amanda Nauman. I think this might be day. Sammy Runnels, was she one or
she
two?
She was fourth, and then and then Emily.
Yeah, no, I mean which day? So she was fourth on day one.
Yeah, no, on day two.
Yeah. Day two, okay. But anyway, you know, you had Clara Hansinger, Cassie Maximenko was up there, Emily Kaczorek. You had you had a field that was not made up of pushovers.
Exactly, exactly.
Can I ask a question about that course? Sure. Just thinking, I mean, I could have asked Amanda, and maybe she'll chime in. Less running, I just know from her foot injury, was it?
There was.
This is a great result for her. I'm just assuming that she was able to just put power to the pedals and not have to worry about
a couple
about
things. She got
toe.
She had a doctor's appointment. They did x-rays and stuff, and the doctor basically cleared her to just go ahead and just pound on it as much as she could tolerate. So she did. So that kind of helped, you know. I talked to her about that, and she said, "Yeah, they cleared me to just go as hard as I want now, and I don't have to worry about it." So that was weighing on her mind a little bit before that, so she could do that. That said, it did have less running, a lot of sand, but it was rideable sand. There were some sections where you did have to run through the sand, and of course over the barriers, but nothing like, you know, the previous week at the World Cups. But yeah, so here's my thing too, is, you know, everybody in the U.S. and a lot of people over here from Europe is basically in the Midwest for a minimum of 10 days, right? Then everybody travels home and races in their local race. And somehow we portray the people that do that on the West Coast as points grabbers. That, to me, that's just ridiculous.
No, it's ridiculous. And that's why we want more races out there. And this is perfect. I mean, this is the legitimate, we're bigger than any other, you know, landmass country that races cyclocross. It makes sense to do this. This isn't Cleveland and DC on the same weekend. It's one coast to the other.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the way it should be. And I think that it shows that there's enough high quality riders to make that work. The one wrench that is thrown in the works is that we just sung the praises of the US Cup, and we want that to work. For it to really work, we want those folks, and this is where it becomes hard, because I don't want to take anything away from this West Sacramento race, which looks like it was awesome and got great, you know, results, but we want this national series.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had players missing from that national series, and it's just because there's not enough money still for that to be something that's doable for them. I mean, all those folks were spending tons of money to do the two World Cups, and then
it would have been really hard to turn around and go all the way to the East Coast, you know, the very next week.
Yeah. So I think that's the one that's the only sad part of it, that you know, this was a great race, but it conflicts with what is being purported as this national series. So there's still a little bit of, you know, conflict there.
Yep.
And, but it's a great problem to have.
Yes, true.
Right?
True.
Yeah.
True, absolutely. Okay, do you guys want to talk about Guyton a little bit first before we talk about Charm City Preview? I think we should. So we had the first Super Prestige race, which seems, it's just amazing. It's so cool that we're already, you know, starting the Super Prestige race. So we had the Guyton race. And if, you know, for both the men's and the women's race at Guyton, if you just look at the results, if you haven't had a chance to watch it, you might, you know, you look and you see Matthew Vanderpool at the top for the men. You think, okay, you know, he rode away from everybody again. But that is not what happened. I mean, we saw a much different race than we did at the two World Cups, where he just rides away. He rides away at the beginning, but then it all gets pulled back together. Now, you could say, well, you know, he was taking it a little bit easier. He wasn't going out as fast. And I think that would all be true. But I think he also did that at the World Cups. But he was just so much better than everyone at the World Cups. Whereas here, I think Van Aert, Sweek, and Vandehaar, you know, were able to, because that gap wasn't so big, if he eased off a little bit, they were able to pull it all back together and make it a lot more interesting in the middle part of that race. Then, who was it? Was it Vandehaar? Someone came in and pitted. or Sweek, I think, came in and pitted when he was leading, and Vanderpool was second. And after the pit, Vanderpool.
Van Aert had a late, had a unfortunate bike exchange too at the end that cost.
So Vanderpool kind of takes the lead from that point, and then is able to, you know, ride away a little bit and win by like 15 seconds. But, you know, I think it's a little bit different story than when, if you just look at the results. I think you guys both watched it. Bill, what did you see when you watched it?
Well, I want to support your analysis of this, that the rest of the field is starting to gain on Vanderpool, and that soon we will see parity in the men's. I want to believe. If you were to ask Matthew Vanderpool, who, let's remember, won this race, he would tell you it's pretty much the worst race that he's ridden in a long time, and that he was technically awful, that he almost hit every obstacle on the track, and that he ran into a bridge with his shoulder.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that you know, there's more parity at all. I mean, Vanderpool's still by far the fastest guy out there. I'm just saying we start to see little chinks in. You see how Wout beats him at Worlds, right?
Yeah, well, I think that it was also that Wout in this race where he has already... You know, when I was giving David a hard time earlier about not winning early in all the races.
David, that, Bill just giving us both a hard time this week. What is
I know
is
he's
this,
like,
is this Bill? Is this how this whole season is going to be?
He just wants to ride away from us. He just wants to ride away from us.
I am feeling the bike shop CX pressure, and I just got to, you know,
bike shop CX.
I'm lashing out.
He doesn't know tech. That's the thing, man. Don't worry, man. We don't know a macro lens from a micro lens from a teleshop lens.
Right.
Teleshop.
Telenet Fidea lens. What...
No, Van Aert, though, he didn't sit in.
He
made moves and attacked, you know, from the beginning, and that was a little different strategy than we've seen from him, which I think is exciting, because I think that's gonna animate these races, and yeah, hopefully they can tug on Vanderpool's
rear wheel cape? A little bit.
I don't know. Something?
David.
Hold him back.
David, did you want to throw anything in about this race, the men's race?
Not so much about the men's race. I think at some point it's not just can the rest of the field catch him. It's I think he builds a lead and doesn't feel the need to go as hard to increase that lead as the race continues.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that's like that's also a factor that what you just said, that from Vanderpool a couple years ago, I mean, was it 22 now, a couple years ago until to now, where it's even scarier that before racing full out for an hour, he would falter in those last 10 minutes, and that's when people would close the gap. And I think him being stronger now is that he's pretty much just keeping that pace for the full hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that they give them, here's what we want. Look at your lap times, and this is what we want your lap times to be in this training ride. And don't push it once you get to that.
You know, the interesting thing I noticed, because we had a couple questions. It's always, you know, it's a good thing that people are always curious about, you know, the unlike road racers where they cross the line and, you know, the first thing they do is turn off their stop their computer on their bikes, and you know, in cyclocross it's all on their wrists, and people are like, why? And it's, you know, sort of easy because you have more than one bike, so you can't have a bike computer, you have to have it on your wrist because that's with you the whole time. Vanderpool, no bike computer, no wrist, no bike, nothing.
He doesn't have a bike.
He's got a bike.
Yeah.
Unless they are inside those 100% glasses that are enormous.
Yeah. It's that new, actually it's not even new anymore, from Garmin, right? Those glasses that have a heads-up display and take pictures and
Exactly. Yeah.
This is Google Glass. I think that it can look at his retina and tell him what his O2 sat is and everything.
It says up in the right-hand corner, I'll be back.
Yeah. Oh, my. So, top five for the men. First place was Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Lauren Sweek. Fourth place, Lars Vandahar. Fifth place, Quinton Hermans. So, Lars starting to... Are we still seeing him? He's not, you know... I mean, obviously, bad season, injured most of the season last year. Just came on a little bit at the end. I think we're kind of still seeing him work the kinks out. What do you think, Bill? Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we got a long way.
I don't
to
know.
Go.
I thought he was back at the end of last season, and he definitely did not look good at Trek.
No, he didn't. He was like a non-factor at Trek.
So fourth place, yeah, it's good that he's getting back in there. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah. So all right, well, let's.
Are we gonna?
Well,
are we,
and Kevin Powell was actually fighting and was right there for 7th place. Until late in the penultimate lap, was it? He went down.
What were the... you know, we can quickly mention it. We're already at an hour 7, so we have... So we could talk for the next 3 hours, and then people would be very upset with us. And Scott would be asleep. And
no,
and
man, I'm still on West Coast time. It's like 6 p.m. for me right now.
Okay, so we got another hour. Who knows what's going on with that Marlux team? They just fired their coach, Danny DeBee, let go. So both DeBees now have been let go from
their
big positions, from national team coach and now Marlux coach. I think it's a disappointment with Powell's. You know, they were really looking for him to be fighting for wins this year. I don't think it's realistic. I'm sorry. I know people are going to get upset with me for saying that, but I don't think it's realistic. And I think that the what I could tell is the gist of it is, well, not enough podiums. The Minute pretty much said that. And then the other thing is, I think they want these younger guys to start taking over. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to be Michael Van Tornout's team, and they need somebody in there that they feel more comfortable coaching. But it's, I don't know. I see them kind of like I see Manny Pegum Pen. I can't say his name. More like he's kind of a George Steinbrenner-esque character there. And when things don't really go the way he wants, it's firing time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then the other one is
Danny DeBee is Billy Martin.
Thank you. And in 11th place, Tom Musson. Who I was kind of expecting getting away from the Telenet Fidea and some kind of whatever bad blood or whatever was going on there. I was expecting better things from him this year. Granted, it's super early. He's not a hot weather racer, so I'm not surprised that he didn't do great in the World Cups here. But
doesn't he also have the most low pressure job out there?
I mean, by all means.
On Telenet, it was like, hey, you know,
you're the guy.
You know, obviously, him and Sven didn't get along. So if you're gonna be here, you better go out there and win some races. Now he's like, hey, Matthew, we'll see you after the race.
Yeah. And then when the
I'm
chase
be
starts,
fighting for position back here.
When the chase starts, he can always say, off. Hey, I'm not chasing. That's my guy up there.
Nope. He's just throwing blocks back there.
I agree. But that being said, I was hoping he would come out this season with a little bit more, a little bit better results than he has so far. You know, I was hoping he would start the season.
No, I agree. I think
there's something to what you said, though, for sure. You know, absolutely. He's not going to chase. He's not going to chase. I mean, that, you know.
I mean, look at the whole team. Change. He's got Sonny Kant as his teammate too. I mean, that guy has the most. If anybody could hide
he's
in plain
not
sight
chase
easier
Kant.
Than Tom
in a race. I mean, he's a really nice person. I don't know about outside of that, but you know.
So speaking of Sonny Kant, the women's race for Guyton, the first Super Prestige, first place, Maud Captains. Holy mackerel! Did she have an awesome ride?
Ran away
second
with it.
Second place, Nikki Bramier. Third place, Sophie DeBoer. Fourth place, Ellie Anderson. Fifth place, Helen Wyman. Now, I'm going to mention sixth place was Sonny Kant because this race would have been, in my opinion, completely different until on the last lap, Sonny Kant I mean, it kind of bombs the whole field.
I mean, yeah, it's just like she rode through the field, which yeah, usually means she kind of like, goes literally around everyone. And but this time, no.
Yeah, and I don't think it was in sand. I think she just, you know, lost control. Meant for one thing to happen, and it just didn't. When, you know, your bike just kind of goes the way it's going to go in that sand like that. And I think the person that it hurt the worst was Anne-Marie Verst, who finished seventh.
I don't know if you got words with that, but yeah, I mean, yeah,
kudos for that.
So that was really, for sure.
I think if watching that race, I think she looked like she was the strongest in that lead group. I think she played a very tactical race up until that point. She was, you know, looked really calm, you know, face was pan, you know, nice, not straining.
Sana Khan was. Who are you talking about?
She was what?
You're saying she.
I'm saying worst.
Yeah.
Worst was the worst looked.
Worst was best.
Verst looked the most in control, the least under the least pressure, and looked like she was strong enough to make a move there. And then, Kant, it almost looked to me like when Kant crashed into everyone, she kind of, the worst, as far as her mechanical, and she couldn't get her chain on, and Kant kind of fixed her bike first, and she kind of like almost like felt like she stood there waiting, like she felt bad about like
that's the right thing to
on.
Do is to wait, yeah.
Right, but of course she did, and goes and finishes ahead of her. So again, with just looking at the standings, you might think one thing, but watching the race, I think it tells a little bit of a different story. Bill, did you have any comments you want to throw in on that?
Well, one, Maud Captains. I mean, she can't be overlooked in this. That every week we're seeing another woman winning races, which is what we want on the men's side, and we don't get. So this is definitely the field that we will continue to watch more closely. And then, you know, just what you said, you had a group of five right after that who were all fighting for the other podium spots. So it was a that group made an exciting race, even if the winner in both races was, we already knew who it was, at least it was somebody different. Also, just about that course, the Guyton course, and remember, kids, G-E-I-T-E-N is a goat, and G-I-E-T-E-N is the race. Taught that lesson myself many years ago.
I love how you bring it up every time, too.
I'm scarred for life.
Right. Doesn't bother me at all.
We have new listeners. I get the same shtick works when you have new listeners.
New viewers.
Viewers.
Of course, if they're new, they don't get that joke either.
Speaking of viewers, this race, you know, we still have the problem with Play Sports that it's hard to see them live except for a very pixelated thing. Cycling TV, you know, people are like, oh, maybe it's on Cycling TV. That's going away in November. They just announced that today, so that's no longer going to be an option. But it is on YouTube, nice version of it. So go watch this race on YouTube because it is the most beautiful camera work that you will find. Yeah. Just that aerial camera, cable cam that just, you know, goes all the way along the beach and then turns and then rotates. So you get them going up the dunes. It's just,
and then the other extreme, the underground cam too. Yeah. In the ditch. You know which one I'm talking about?
Well, Nierpelt, which we didn't even talk about, was the Sudal Classic race, which is always awesome because they got that huge just drainage ditch in the middle of the course that I mean, the men and the women now are just riding right over. You know, it's got to be a couple meters.
And if that that drainage ditch was on a course in the U.S.,
in the U.S.
Exactly.
They don't do that in Europe. Yeah. Exactly.
And then I just want to throw in, I did mention her name, but Ellie Anderson, top five.
Yeah.
Not
you
bad.
Know.
Yeah. Another one who obviously, doesn't like racing in the U.S. anymore.
Right. Although I love it when she's over here because I think she's a great addition to the women's field. So,
and I'll tell you what though.
Oh yeah,
did you guys listen to the coverage over the weekend as well for this race? No.
Is she Belgian now?
No, but it's like the announcers, and I could be making this up because I don't understand the language, but every time they would just say, and mod captains. But it was always Elanderson Amerikansky. It's like, you know, they're always pointing out that she's the American in the race.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Well, you know, they said the same thing about Katarina. Yeah. So.
She's the American.
I would like to, before we get to Charm City, there is one other race series that I just want to point out, though. Yes.
Helena Wyman. Go.
Yeah. Fifth place.
Fifth place here. But again, in Neerpelt, which means what in if it's spelled with N-E-E-R as opposed to N-E-E-R, it's the pelt of the Nier. It's like Naga hide or something like that. But she has had quite a weekend for a woman that was kind of counted out 2 years ago as starting to age.
Well, how about last year when she broke herself in half?
Yeah. How about last year when she broke herself in half? I mean, one of our first and favorites that we've interviewed on the show multiple times, Scott, Helen Wyman is still a force in cyclocross racing.
I think this is going to be her first Charm City that she's missing in
a long time.
Many years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I did want to just quickly, we're not doing anything quickly today, mention was the EKZ Cross Tour, which is the Swiss Tour, which is a pretty fantastic series as well. That is, I think, where some really great riders go and sort of do their bidding. For instance, Corne Van Kessel, mm-hmm. you know, who we've seen at the top of World Cups was racing that instead of racing Guyton. But what I want to point out first and foremost, cross-country mountain bike world champion Yolanda Neff deciding to do a little off-season training ride and blew up the women's race. And it wasn't like she was beating nobodies. So she won this Bern race over Pavla Havlikova and Lucy Chanel.
Man. Yeah, that's
and,
a good,
you know,
field.
Yeah, a strong field, and just took it to all of them. So that was pretty fun to see.
And that is a series. That's a series we would cover more. We just don't have time. You know, it's a great series, and we barely can fit in what we cover now. So, but maybe someday, you know, you never know. So go ahead, Bill.
And then, no, I was just going to mention, if I can bring it up here. Yeah. The, men's race, won by Marcel Waldauber, Swiss rider who we've mentioned, Simon Zahner, another Swiss rider, third place. So those two guys beat Corne Van Kessel, who came in third. You would think that he'd go over there and be able to kind of take it to those guys, but those Swiss riders know how to ride their bikes. And I think these are much hillier courses, much more technical courses, you know, Switzerland, huge mountain biking community and nation. So I think that they sort of like to make their courses much more technical, so that works to their strengths. But Steve Chanel, who we saw, came in fifth place. The one thing I wanted to mention, because he came up in the news earlier today, is Francis Moret, who for years, if it was a World Cup, Moret was going to show up and be at the front of it. I mean, that's just, you know, that's what he lived for. In the last couple years, after no longer being, what was he, FDJ, which
Lamprey,
I forget, whatever his,
yeah, I think he was
I,
FDJ,
I should know this, yeah, so no longer on that team, moved to another French team, and they really, he's a talented road racer as well, you know, he'd be up there in the Giro always, and they wanted him to concentrate more on road, not as much on cross, so he sort of disappeared. He was doing these EKZ races, doing really well. Now he's been dropped from that team also, so now he wants to just concentrate on cross again, which is awesome, but ended up, 24th in this race, so little ways to go. And in this article that they had about him today, where he was talking about, you know, not having a team anymore, he also said that He wasn't sure where the national championships, maybe they haven't decided yet for France. If it was close to his home or in his home region, he would race it. But if it's not, maybe not. So this could be the final year for Francis Morey.
Yeah, I'll never forget him at Louisville Worlds. That was, he's what made that, the beginning of that race, so exciting. And then, faded. But man, yeah, just a great racer.
He remains my screensaver on my phone. My lock screen is still him coming, cresting the
that's
hill.
That's awesome.
Carrying
that's
his bike.
That's awesome. But, and then one more thing for me, too, before we move on to Charm City Preview, just want to mention, Bert Guyton, U23, first place.
I was going there as well, man.
Jens
I'm waiting
Decker.
To jump in.
We can't. Friend of the pod, Jens
friend
Decker.
Of the pod. One of our favorite viewers.
Right.
Yeah.
With Adam.
No, Jens is awesome. He always there with the insight that we're
lacking.
We just don't know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So congratulations, man. That's a nice ride.
All right,
Ellen Van Looy. I'm just throwing that out there. It's there, man. After what she did it here in the States, and really went out hard and raced hard every race. She was
amazing.
Out there racing in. But she raced all 3 days in Wisconsin, didn't she?
And raced the single speed
race. Yeah,
that's
what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, like that,
right.
In the fun races as much as the competitive races. And then went out and tore it up at Neerpelt.
The thing about her, you can tell she is just a rider who just loves to ride cyclocross. The whole time she was here, she was smiling. You could tell she was just loving every minute of being over here. At least it looked that way. And she's just great. I'm so glad she was here.
She was racing in the single speed race and started at the back. And
That's right.
Taylor Jones, who does this show every once in a while, was in that race as well. And Taylor is no slouch. And she came flying by him, and he was like, "Hi, Helen." Ellen, hi, Ellen. How's it going? And she was like, "Oh, great. Have a good race. Have fun." As she was just like zipping by.
Oh, that's funny. Pushing like a 48-14 or something. All right, Charm City. We have a race coming up, right, Bill?
We do. We have the second round in the U.S. Cup, a C1 and a C2 in Baltimore. I'll be up there working some media. Not announcing this year. I'm actually kind of happy about it. I get to
move around
and sort of gave up that gig to do more filming and video work. We got a whole team up there. So
awesome.
If you follow C3CX on Twitter and then CharmCityCX on Instagram and then also my field, we're going to be doing a ton of social media work for them with live tweeting and Instagram and all the kind of stuff that we did at DCCX. We're sort of porting that over to Charm City to bring that coverage. So please tune in to that. But the most important thing about Charm City is you need to go to that Charm City CX. I don't know if you guys haven't been there yet. Instagram feed and look at what
I was
building.
Just going to say that. Are they like challenging the belt for the Belgian national race for the highest flyover in existence?
It looks like it's two stories already. They are. And tell me. I don't know. I want to know. I believe that they are the first U.S. race, at least the first U.S. UCI race, to use scaffolding as a flyover, like we see every week in Belgium. And they have a pretty much like a full, you know, corporate development, industrial sized scaffolding structure. We don't know what it's going to be yet. They are out there in Druid Hill Park right now building it, and it looks enormous already.
Yes. It's going to be very interesting to see what the heck that is.
They had this flyover for years and finally couldn't store it anymore. It was sponsored by a home builder, and I believe he may have built it as well. It was built like a home. I mean, we had that thing. That was the one we had at DCCX for a year, and it, you needed a full size, you know, 24-foot truck and everything else to carry that thing around. And yeah, they went a little different direction this year. And yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, we got.
That was a lot of flyover talk.
Hey, that's what we're about. We got Charm City coming up, of course, October 7th and 8th. That's this coming weekend. Also on October 8th is the first of the Dave Vey. The Runza race on October 8th in Belgium. So that's going to be, that's basically this weekend stuff we'll be talking about. Then the following weekend, of course, coming up on the schedule, we got.
Where can they watch that Runza race?
Oh, at. Is it just trek.com?
I think, or trekbikes.com.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Trek, of course, continuing showing the full DeVeve series again this week. You don't need any kind of special crazy VPN or anything like that. You can just go click on it and watch it. So following weekend is going to be Gloucester. We got that coming up on the 14th and 15th. That's C2 action here in the United States. And then Zonhoven will be on the 15th, will be the C1 over in Belgium. And then we'll also have Boulder on the 14th and 15th. And that's like we've said, you know, we've got two widely spaced C2s in the U.S. So that's a great weekend here. The next World Cup. A lot of people at the races were asking, when is the next World Cup? When's the next World Cup? That is, of course, Kokcida, and that is on October 22nd, which I believe there's a race you're involved with that weekend, right, Bill?
Yeah, it's going to take a backseat to DCCX on the global calendar, but, you know, if set up your DVR, put in a cassette tape,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. And,
videotape.
Hey, I'm going to be out there in D.C. hopefully for that. So we got to have some kind of viewing party, man. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Do we want to cover any mail or questions? Do we have some voicemail?
Nope.
You don't want to do any?
I think we're already at an hour.
We don't want to do one voicemail at all.
Okay, we'll do one.
All right. Which one are we doing?
I'm going to...
Tell us the number.
I don't know. I don't know. They don't match up with what I have in here. It's the one asking what you would do on a day off.
Yeah. On a day off date with Sven?
Well, if you just say it, then there's no sense in even playing it, Scott.
Well, you can edit that.
He doesn't edit. I'm you know that he doesn't edit.
I'm not editing. Well, here, I'm playing it right now. Boop.
Hey guys, just wondering, Ed. If you had that one perfect evening, where would you go on a date with Sven? Thanks.
I was confused because you said a day off, not a whatever the way the guy said it. Anyways, go ahead.
I've already played it. Right, now we're back.
So what's your answer, Bill?
I want to know your answers.
I would take him. You know what? I know what I would do. I'd take him to an Iowa Hawks football game.
Oh, going the Wout Van Aert route.
Right. Exactly. I mean, come on. It's perfect.
No. Okay.
David?
I don't know. I was thinking like a busman's holiday. We'd go over to Matt Anthony and announce a race.
There you go. Bill, did you have any like...
Bill said something like, we'd go to the movies. First, we'd get a cafe latte.
We'd share a
popcorn. Then we'd watch the Spendness video. Have you seen those, Bill?
No. What's that all about?
Svenness T-shirts back in stock, right, Bill?
They are back in stock. That is true.
How many do you have without tire sealant?
Well, I'm going to give my answer first, and then I will go into the T-shirt situation first. Sven and I are going to see Coldplay at the O2. That's what we're doing.
Nice. There you go.
I think that he would enjoy it. Okay. So I haven't put it up on the site yet, but I do have Svenness. Just these are up on the site. Just your normal standard, but still, you know, limited Svenness shirts. Price to go at $20 each are available at Svenness.com. You can go, that's Svenness.com. You can go pick one up there. I am going to add a special limited Bike Shop CX custom T-shirt, Send this T-shirts as well. Those are going to be. They're not race worn. They're not game worn. They're shop worn.
They're shop worn.
Shop worn T-shirts.
Not really shop worn. Just shop exposed.
They
For
come.
People that are wondering.
They come. They come with. Sprinter. Yeah, they come with some. What's the best way of saying?
Was it, is it Stans? Which one?
What is
no,
it?
No, no,
no.
Orange.
It was Orange Seal.
Yeah.
So for people that are wondering, Bill stored a box of at least 100 T-shirts in my van at the Trek race. I promptly needed to grab some Orange Seal tire sealant out of my van. And it had like a film over the top of it. It had been sitting there for a while, right? So I promptly take the top off, look straight in the thing, and then squeeze it. It goes, boom. I mean, it's running down my face, down my glasses. Luckily, I had glasses on. It exploded all over.
Back to Michigan on Monday, and he's still picking at his hair. Saying,
it was still in my hair. Yeah, it was all over the van. And unfortunately, some got on some of those T-shirts. So those are legit T-shirts,
yeah.
Man. You can
yeah.
those. Should, I mean, you're charging more for those, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that is sealant that raced a World Cup.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, you know, it fell off before. But, you know, the rest of the sealant that didn't spill made it into Drew's wheel. That
Exactly. Yeah. And got raced at the World Cup.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, guys, are we going to wrap this up then?
I think so.
All right, Mr. David Palin, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
At Mr. David Palin.
On the Twitters?
The Twitters and the Instants.
Grams. And Bill.
You can get in touch with me if you have a comment, complaint, or anything else at feedback@cxairs.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter and Venmo if you like wanted to send me money at cxhairs. Hey, do us a favor. Go and tell your friends and your teammates and anybody else who likes cyclocross that, you know, TDDTIE is back and the season's back and we're doing this and we'd love to have them along to enjoy the show and be a part of it. So go to iTunes if that's how you consume podcasts and subscribe. And then you could even rate and review them. Don't read the review about the mountain biking stuff. We're working on that. But other than that, all the other reviews are great. And we really want to, you know, we saw a little bit of drop off in the off season. We'd love to get everybody back listening again because it's a lot of fun
to have
your interaction. In it, the hotline is 405-CX-HAIRS. Also, my book that I have, Skills, Drills, and Belly Aches, is available at cyclocrossbook.com. Already mentioned the shirts, svenness.com. Scott Diedenbach, where can people get in touch with you?
Well, before I do that, I got to tell you this. You're going to love this. I had three people at Sacramento come up to me, ask me, are you the guy that does the podcast? I'm like, yes. And one of them, before I even said, most of the time people recognize her voice, you know, but they recognized me and came up and asked me. So that was awesome. So
well,
thanks a lot
for
that,
guys. You're featured right now on cxhairs.com.
Oh, am I?
Uh-huh.
Like how?
In a big picture from a Charm City from last year.
Oh, my goodness. I'll have to go check that out. I haven't been on it in the last couple of days. So anyways, that was very cool. One guy even said, yeah, his wife, who isn't even that much of a cross fan, he's like, you got to listen to this. And she's like, oh, my God, this is really good. So
has she listened to the Bike Shop CX too?
Yeah, it was the last show where we were talking about
I'm with you, Bill. I get it, Bill. I'm with you.
I'm like totally lost.
I'll explain
lost.
That to you later. When we record, I'll explain why you should be angry with him about that later.
Why?
This isn't even Yiddish.
Right out English, and he just...
Now I'm totally lost. Yeah, that people are laughing at the international corn incident by Mr. David Palin. So if you want to hear that, get to the last Bike Shop CX show and listen to that. If you want to get
a
hold of me,
jam
Scott
band?
Diedenbach. It should be.
The international corn incident?
Yes. Kind of like leftover salmon and the international corn incident.
Well, I was going to go with the string cheese incident, but you know, you can go
so
leftover
string
salmon
cheese,
too.
Yeah. Yeah, that works
sorry,
too.
Keep interrupting.
I am at BikeShopCX on Twitter or Cyclocross Network on Instagram. Guys, thanks for being with me again this week. And this is like the beginning of our regular schedule now, right?
Yeah, yes. They won't be so intermittent, and no. They'll be longer and more packed.
The problem I have now is there may be like three other podcasts squeezed in here before we do this again next week.
Yeah, but next week. We're on for next week.
We are on for next week.
All right, guys.